Self-Evident is a platform that is dedicated to speaking truths that were once self-evident, but doing so in love. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Self-Evident. Today, I am going to want to focus on an article that the Washington Stand recently published entitled, "To the 41 Million Christians Unlikely to Vote This November, You Need to Repent." We are going to be getting into this article, what my take is, what I think Christian involvement looks like in this political sphere. But before I get into that, I want to tell you about an important IFI forum that is coming up on October 18th from 7 to 9 p.m. And it is the COVID-19 pandemic, COVID Con. What went wrong and why? And at this forum, we are going to be featuring special guests, Dr. William Crevier, board certified internal medicine and pediatrics physician at the Center for Primary Healthcare in Orland Park, Illinois, and Dr. Zumhagen, co-founder of Fearfully and Wonderfully Made, a holistic and nutritionally based center located in Orland Park, Illinois, where he currently practices. This is an informative event that you are not going to want to miss. It's going to be doing a deep dive into what actually went wrong with the COVID-19 pandemic and why it went wrong. You are going to be getting a lot of good medical answers for all of your burning questions. To learn more about this really important event, go to illinoisfamily.org/events. That's illinoisfamily.org/events. So like I said, I want to be doing a deeper focus into this article that the Washington Stand recently published on the 41 million Christians, according to statistics, that are not voting. In fact, this is what the article says, quote, "According to some truly shocking statistics from George Barna at Arizona Christian University, as many as 41 million Christians plan to sit this election out, more than enough to hand the country's keys to the eager and radical left. For Donald Trump's opponent, the news that one of the Dems' biggest obstacles to victory is voluntarily shirking their civic duty is cause for premature celebration." And I think you can understand the gist of the article, and the article cites a lot of good pastors and their takes as well. So I really encourage you to read the article for itself in its entirety, because that's going to give you a lot of good context for what my take is going to be and what we're going to be discussing today. So first, what I'm going to do in this episode is I'm just going to give you three main points about why Christians should vote. And we're going to cover two of them in the first half and then one of them in the second half. So first of all, off the bat, I just want to make the very biblical claim to go back to the beginning that government was not instituted by man. In fact, government was instituted by God. Romans 13, 1 through 2 make it very clear that the rulers that we have before us, while yes, especially in the United States of America, we have a democratic republic, and yet at the same time, the rulers that are before us have been instituted by God. And more than that, the structure of government itself was instituted by God because man is imperfect. Man is prone to sin. Man is prone to evil because of our sinful natures, Romans 5. God instituting government is his way of safeguarding humanity from our destructive tendencies. Laws are good. Rules are good. Punishment, discipline for disobeying laws are good. Romans 13 also makes this very clear that being punished for evil is a good thing, that God has given government the key, so to speak, to civic discipline, and that these are good things. However, how do we make sure we have a good government? And while we are not so much in charge of the ultimate good government, because that is something, one, God is in charge of, and yes, we are citizens of heaven. Our home is not this earth. Our home is not in the rulers that we have over us. And yet at the same time, we are, according to Jeremiah 29, to seek the welfare of the city. And this is actually my second point. Passivity is not an option when it comes to Christians living in a society. It's not an option to just sit wildly by and expect other people to make decisions for you and for you to live under a rock, essentially, and just quote unquote, go about your business. That's not an option. We were created, we were chosen in him to be salt and light in this world. And when it comes to the political landscape, The political landscape is very much included in our command to be salt and light. It is very much necessary that Christians seek the welfare of their cities and their states and their nations. In Jeremiah 29, we get the famous Jeremiah 29:11 verse of, "I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you, not to harm you, plans to give you a future with hope." And while we love that verse and hold on to that verse, we often miss the context of that passage at large. And the context of that passage is that actually Israel is in Babylon. Israel is exiled away from their homeland because of their sin. And yet in the midst of that, God commands them to seek the welfare of the cities that he is going to place them in. Passivity for them is not an option. Just because they are not in their native home of Israel, just because they are not with their temple, just because they do not have their day-to-day life does not mean that they are just to sit down and do nothing. In fact, exile was a time for them to act. It was a time for them to seek the welfare of the city. And we actually see this very tangibly in the story of Daniel. Now, Daniel's story, his whole book of the Bible is very popular for a variety of reasons. First of all, of course, the famous Daniel in the lion's den, and of course, the fiery furnace and the handwriting on the wall and King Nebuchadnezzar. And then in the second half, it's very popular for its apocalyptic literature and the end times and different eschatological backgrounds love to talk about Daniel as one of the forefront books when it comes to the end times. And yet in the midst of this, what we see is we see a young man who was exiled from his home, trained under Babylonian scholars and teachers. He, along with his friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and yet they did not forget their homeland. They sought the welfare of the city they were placed in. When King Nebuchadnezzar had his dream and no one in the land, no Chaldean, no bearder, nothing could interpret or even tell him what the dream was, Daniel could, because Daniel knew there was a God in heaven who was a revealer of dreams. And so because God gave Daniel the wisdom and the knowledge to interpret and explain King Nebuchadnezzar's dream, he was exalted in the land of Babylon and given high authority. We see the same with his friends, Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael, when they refused to bow down to King Nebuchadnezzar's statue. God himself protected them in the fire, which causes King Nebuchadnezzar to praise and extol the God of heaven. And so what we see in the stories of these young men is not passivity. It's not put your head down and hope you get by. It's bold proclamation of the gospel in the case of his three friends, that even though every single person in the land was bowing down to this statue, probably fellow friends, probably very difficult for them in one way with the peer pressure, and yet they knew that their job in the city that God had placed them in was not passivity. It was not, oh, I'm just going to bow down and get by and maybe I'll make a difference later. It was bold proclamation of the gospel, of the truth that only God deserves our fealty. We will only bow to him. And so how do we translate this into the modern mind when we have these stories like Daniel, who was active in the government of Babylon? We see this as well in Daniel chapter 5, that he has lasted out the entire Babylonian Empire into the Persian Empire because of his status in the land and his reputation of being a man of wisdom. So what do we learn from these? We learn passivity is never encouraged. In fact, it's actually very much so looked down upon. What we have had the same amount of respect and love for the story of Daniel in the lion's den, if he had just obeyed the king's command to stop praying, if he had just obeyed the law of the land, would we have had the same amount of respect and love for the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego for refusing to bow down to the king's statue if they had just bowed down just to get by? Would we have had as much respect for Daniel for his courage in keeping his identity in the one true God and yet elevating through God's power to top positions in the Babylonian Empire? Would we have had the same respect for them? I would say no. And in fact, scripture looks upon them very highly for their boldness. And so we as Christians in this day and age, how does this translate to us? It translates in that we have been given a right to make decisions in the land, something that only in biblical times, only kings would do, only magistrates would do. And yet, because we, the people of the United States, are truly the rulers in this democratic republic, we have been given the civic government responsibility to make decisions. I would strongly argue that you refusing to vote as an American citizen, of course, but also as a Christian, is shirking your civic responsibility and duty that God has given you. God has given you the privilege to help write laws, essentially, and make decisions and tell our representatives and senators what we want, to tell the nation what kind of president we want. And so for you to shirk this responsibility is no light matter. In fact, I think this is a very serious matter of, what do you actually think about government? Do you actually think it's instituted by God and therefore you have a responsibility to participate in it as far as you're able? Now, I understand that not everyone can run for some type of office. One, there are age restrictions. So I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the basic duty and responsibility of voting. It does not take an entire day. Some people will make it out to be this huge thing. I've voted many times. It takes 4 to 5 minutes. And because you're supposed to vote in your district, it's probably a 5-minute drive. In total, it's going to take you about 15 minutes to vote. It is not a lot of time, especially once every 4 years for a president. It's not a lot of time. It's not a lot of time commitment that God has given you to do. I would encourage you and challenge you, Christian, why are you shirking this duty? And I think the answer to that, I'm going to be getting into the next half on the moral question of this election, between the moral questionableness of both candidates, because this is an issue that I think lies at the forefront of Christian thought. But first, I want to get into another event that is coming up before we move on to the second half. October 22nd, 5:30 p.m. to 9 p.m., we are going to be having a Threat of Open Borders event. If you guys keep up with Illinois Family Institute and the articles that they produce, you will have seen a startling article that should stop you in your tracks. Currently, there are 323,000 unaccompanied minors that the government has no idea where they are. 32,000 of them miss their court date, and 291,000 are just unknowable of where they are. This threat of open borders, this illegal immigration problem, yes, we're talking about Springfield, Ohio, and the Haitian migrant issue that is going on there, and my heart breaks for that community, but this is so much bigger. And there are so many facets to why illegal immigration is such a horrible evil on a society. Borders are good. And back to the Jeremiah 29 talk, how am I supposed to seek the welfare of my city, the people that are around me, if I have people coming in from all over the place illegally? Ali Bastaki, in her episode talking about this, made a great point that I can either love my neighbor or I can support the unmitigated allowance of unvetted illegal immigrants, but I can't do both. So in this very important event, we're going to be talking about this. We're going to be talking about the threat of open borders, what that actually means for a society at large. We're going to be featuring experts Rodney Scott, Sarah Carter, and Victor Avila, where they will discuss the threat of open borders in our communities. This is an event that you do not want to miss. Cost is $40. Go to illinoisfamily.org/events to find out more. That's illinoisfamily.org/events. All right, like I said in the first half, I think the question of Christians not voting. Now, again, I just want to say really quickly that one could say that the 41 million Christians not voting could just be cultural Christians. Who knows if they're actually evangelical Christians or non-evangelical, or if they are consistent in attending church, or if they truly believe in the message of the gospel. So we really don't know what that term Christian means when it comes to this case study. So I just want to put that out there, that it could just be referring to people that claim that they have some type of Christian faith. However, on the chance that it doesn't, and that it actually refers to people who are consistent in attending church, who are consistent in aligning themselves with the doctrines and the tenets of the Christian faith, I can understand the moral quandary that people are facing in this election. On the one side, with the Democrats, we have a candidate that supports the unmitigated, unvetted allowance of illegal aliens into our society. We have a candidate who supports policies that slow economic growth, that line the pockets of bureaucracies, that make middle class living more difficult, that make America more dependent on other nations, that take jobs away from middle class people. I can go on and on. And we have a candidate on the left who supports and champions the slaughter of innocent babies. So there's that side. And I would hope, I know this isn't true, unfortunately, I would hope every Christian would not vote for that categorically. However, that's not true, unfortunately, which is a whole nother issue, a whole nother episode in and of itself that we've already covered to some extent if you go back and listen to former episodes. On the other side, we have a candidate who is still pro-choice in a lot of ways. We have a candidate who is not the most moral person. I can understand the moral quandary that some Christians are facing when it comes to, okay, well, they're both pro-choice. So who do we vote for? What type of measurement do we use to make sure we're doing good with our vote? So I can understand that question. And I just have to plug the Ali interview one more time. If you go back and listen to my conversation with Ali Bastecki, she gave an amazing answer to this question. So I'm just going to piggyback off of her. So if you want to see the original clip, you can find our talk with Ali Bastecki on our YouTube and everywhere you find podcasts. So Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc. Going back to the moral quandary between these candidates, what we do see is we see a lesser of two evils. We see someone, and I'm referring to former President Donald Trump, that can be persuaded towards life. He voted no on Amendment 4 in Florida, which is huge. If you don't know what Amendment 4 is, it was a very radical pro-abortion amendment that would essentially undercut Florida's pro-life heartbeat law. He voted no on that. And yet, I can tell you for certain that Kamala Harris would have voted yes. Kamala Harris has made an entire career out of championing the ability and the quote-unquote right to slaughter an innocent child. Part of me understands the moral quandary that people face in this election of Donald Trump not being a moral person, still being a little bit pro-choice. And yet at the same time, I don't, because we're not voting for a perfect person. We never have. We have never had a candidate who is perfect on every single piece of legislation, who has never made anything wrong, who has never made any type of mistakes while in charge. That's not possible because we're human and we make mistakes. Even really good representatives that Illinois has in the House have made mistakes. And so we cannot expect a presidential candidate to be the perfect cookie cutter ideal of what we want in a leader. Now, is it good to strive for that? Is it good for a moral society to encourage morality as the pinpoint of what we want in a leader? Absolutely. And yet, what we have been given in this election cycle is essentially a lesser of two evils or a really, really evil. And I think the choice is clear for Christians. You have a moral responsibility to at least vote for the lesser of two evils. If not for yourself, for your children, for your grandchildren, think about the generational impact that a Trump presidency could have and a Harris administration could have. We've already had 4 years of Biden-Harris and has not gone well. Under Trump, there were no wars going on. He put a stop to everything, if we're just going to talk about that. And yet, under Harris, the world seems to have gone kaput. And yet, under Biden's rule, the world has gotten crazier and crazier in the Middle East with Russia and Ukraine. What kind of world do you want to pass along? Do you want a world where your children have safer communities, better education, more affordable groceries, more affordable housing, a more pro-life stance in the country where laws are upheld by the states? Do you want that kind of country, Or do you want the kind of country that Kamala Harris is prescribing? And I've gotten into a bit of a deep dive on her economic policies. So you can go back and listen to that episode. So I won't try to bore you with going through all those again. But in conclusion, I just want to wrap up and restate the points that government has been instituted by God for our good. And in addition to this, Christians are commanded to seek the welfare of the city God has placed us in. He has sovereignly placed us in a sovereign nation with a democratic republic where the people are the rulers, where the people get to decide who's in power, what policies stand. And so, Christian, do not shirk your responsibility, because not only are you shirking the responsibility for yourself, you're shirking it for generations to come. In addition to this, I feel very strongly that you will be responsible to God when you stand before him of the opportunities he gave you to seek the welfare of the city and you chose not to. And so, Christian, I encourage you this November election to seek the welfare of the city, the nation, the state that God has placed you in, because that is our moral responsibility. Go vote and vote for the lesser of two evils. Until next time, let us firmly rely on the protection of divine providence. This is Self-Evident.